Hey, welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and today is episode number 154, and this is going to be a mailbag or listener Q&A episode. We're talking about all things cardio, but before we get to that, I have just a little bit of housekeeping, and first of all, to let you know or remind you that the Lifetime Athlete is the home of one-on-one peak performance coaching and online group training known as the Training Tribe, where we focus on the concept of athletic fitness and building better, more well-rounded, completely athletic athletes. And the we in this deal is Coach Jay-Z and his broach, PK. Good morning, PK.
Good morning. Good morning. I mean, you're the one, you and the tribe are building those completely athletic athletes. The we in this podcast is you and I. So I can't take credit for any of that good work, but happy to be a part of it, riding along.
Yeah, and it's exciting today because it's time again for one of those oh-so special shows. And I received a great collection of queries from astute listeners. What I've done is I've saved these up to use in a single show because they're all related, and of course that's today. And lately, a lot of folks have been asking very poignant questions about the pros and cons of aerobic exercise, aka cardio in quotations, which is short for training to enhance cardiorespiratory fitness and things like fatigue resistance or endurance.
Yeah, and I think that this is interesting. I'm glad to, you know, I'm going to be playing the part of the listener asking the questions, and I'm always interested to hear your answers. So this information is going to be new to me as well. But on the subject of cardio, over the years, as you and I have talked, and we've covered it a little bit on a pod before, I'm always surprised at what I think I know about cardio isn't exactly right. It isn't exactly wrong, but it's just there's some nuances that are and some big points that are really important that I think are sort of lost in what we think that we know as a sort of gen pop about cardio.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the research and our understanding of it has continued to evolve. And I think we're at a good place now where we're really starting to be able to paint the picture of, okay, well, what is aerobic exercise in terms of ancestral patterns for humans, and how does that impact health and longevity? How would any athlete in any sport utilize it for their conditioning? And then ultimately, what about those people who make aerobic exercise or cardio their sport? You know, so, you know, running, cycling, swimming, rowing, Nordic skiing. You know, I'm not saying that there's not, you know, tactics and technique in all of those sports, but also the main thing is it's a cardio thing, if you get my drift.
I do. And I feel like without doing any, you know, research or pulling from the data or whatever, I think that what I've witnessed, again, men on the street observing, is that the folks that really believe in cardio are the ones that are good at it, you know, that comes naturally to them. And the ones that may be skeptical about it are for some of the folks like myself that it's more of a challenge for. And so I think if we set those aside and say, all right, let's leave our personal experiences out of this picture and really just kind of like base it on science and experience coming from you, Coach. That's what I think is interesting, because of course, if you're not good at something, you're going to be sort of disinclined toward it. And if you excel at it, you're going to be like, yeah, this is a good thing. That's just human nature.
Yeah. And I agree. And, I love it when you do play the role of the questioner. And so just before we do that, I have this kind of agreement to say, you know, this point to make, which is, I think you hit the nail on the head where anytime we are gifted or predisposed to a certain type of activity, and that's due to body type and genetics and even personality to some extent, you know, we're going to deviate or really almost defend that and maybe possibly not understand or ridicule something on the other side. And I think that the model that I've come to believe in, and I do think it's a good one, is it's general enough to say, hey, look, we want everybody to have a sprinkling of all the capacities of human performance. But we also encourage you to dive a bit more deeply into the one that is your jam, and that's totally fine. And so we just got to find that balance, I think, for each of us that, you know, helps us to perform well, but also to stay healthy and an athlete for life.
Couldn't agree more. Well, let's dive into the first question, shall we?
I'd love that. Thank you.
Okay. So this one, Scott asks, Coach Jay-Z, what's the deal on cardio? A lot of meatheads swear it kills your gains. Others say it's bad for you and causes cardiac problems. Is it bad for my joints? Your approach seems to be pretty balanced on the surface. Can you please set the record straight? Should I be letting go of cardio or getting mo of it?
I mean, a well phrased question. It's a big one, and thank you, Scott. Letting go or getting mo of cardio mojo. Oh my goodness, that's he might be a regular listener given the way he kind of uses our vernacular. So first, it does appear that Scott's question is this: to cardio or not to cardio? You know, yeah. And all jokes aside, there's a lot of unpacking, because I think he really emphasized a couple of very commonly occurring points. So first of all, I'm going to say this. Yes, Scott and everyone else, you should do cardio in the right amount, because the dose makes the poison, as with so many things. You know, there's a lot of people that would suggest that broccoli is a healthy food to eat, but I don't think you would eat a wheelbarrow full of it, and that may have other consequences.
Indeed, indeed. So I guess then it's like, how do we know? How do we figure out for us what the right amount is?
Yeah, so this... I think this is one of the things that I'm going to try to develop. And I would, I'd start out by saying, I think you're onto something there, Scott. If you're trying to build mass, strength, speed, then distance running or high volume jogging is not necessarily a good choice. Now, I'm not suggesting that all cardio is jogging either, but you know, so a lot of people will ask that question. And so, yeah, if you're trying to build your strength, your speed, your power, your lean body mass, hypertrophy, the big gains, doing more than a little bit, you know, let's say a mile here or there once a week, jogging and a few sprints, you know, that's going to be counterproductive, because it's going to try to turn your body into kind of a lean, wiry distance runner. And if the creature that you either are or are trying to develop further isn't that, I agree. So yes, I want you to do some cardio, but not too much, actually, in an athlete who's very, let's say, weight centric. And also do it in the non or low impact options, because those things don't have the ramifications, excuse me, like jogging or running will. So use the bike, the elliptical, the pool, the rower, probably better in this case. And what that's really due to is what's known as hormonal signaling. So, you know, whenever we do something, it kind of creates a signal in our body that we use certain hormones and neurotransmitters. So, you know, certain things will make us secrete more dopamine or serotonin or epinephrine, cortisol, the list goes on. So a lot of jogging will be kind of a stressor to the body to not build and actually pare down to some extent. And we also have this muscle fiber recruitment business where, you know, any slow cardio is going to be recruiting primarily the slow twitch muscle fibers and biasing them, as opposed to the fast twitch fibers, which are the ones of strength, speed, and power. So we want to, you know, think about that a little bit. Again, small amounts are tolerated by the beast, but not, you don't want to do the majority of your training that way. And then lastly, especially with running, we have what are known as eccentric contractions. So every time your foot hits the ground, you know, there's some absorption of force and some lengthening of muscles under loads. In fact, we talked about eccentric muscle contractions a few episodes ago. And those things tend to have a lot of breakdown potential, which we might not always want, you know, in, say, an athlete who's trying to, again, you know, build the strength, speed, power. So long first part of my answer there, and I apologize, but I wanted to just kind of flesh that out.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, super dumbing that down, yes, it is counterproductive, but not eradicating it completely. So I think that you're going to get in some of the more nuances as we go on. What about the second part about that? Others saying it's bad and it causes cardiac problems.
It's a big rabbit hole, but I just say this: done poorly or inappropriately and to extremes, yes, cardio is actually bad for your heart. Now, before everyone, you know, fires me and all that, let me explain, please. You have to train chronically hard for years, really, to, you know, create those problems. Because what? Sure. The beast is durable. I mean, you know, a little bit here and there, no big deal. It's good for us. But again, you know, those people who are doing high volumes of, you know, moderate to higher intensity training, they're the ones that tend to see these altered sinoatrial rhythms. They'll start to develop atrial flutter or fibrillation and even valve problems. So they're needing to go in and, you know, get treated for this in different ways. And ultimately, we do see, you know, surgeries and even catastrophic deaths. So this is fairly well recognized now in the science around the endurance community. And, you know, unfortunately, I recently lost a friend to this very thing at age 59, who, you know, that's kind of was his pattern. And he, you know, just a decade ago started to develop some problems, was getting some treatment. He was actually scheduled to get an entire heart transplant, but, you know, didn't quite make that. So, you know, quite a tragedy. And I know several others, personally know people who have had multiple issues and surgeries related to, let's say, chronic cardio in the high-performing endurance athlete. And some of those are, you know, Ironman world champions. One guy I know who is and still alive. And then also a couple of people in my local community. So this is mainly attributed to an imbalance of a polarized model of training. Again, something that we've talked about here a bit, which applies very well to endurance athletics or cardio, if you will, where that model would suggest that we do lots of easy work, you know, and occasionally some very hard work. That's a natural pattern for humans. And you see this in animals, in the animal kingdom. But when we get modern and we start to contrive things and we do this moderately hard type of work all the time, because we're doing it for all sorts of reasons. We think it's good. We have goals. It's stress relief. It's social. You start naming it. Well, then we see that's the culprit. That's what causes these problems, because it creates, you know, too much stress to the heart, and then also not an opportunity for, you know, rest and recovery.
Oh, that's sad. And what's interesting, I guess, about Scott's question is that he's right about both of those. I think that, like, that in his question talking about killing gains for people looking for mass, and others talking about identifying the cardiac problems, both of those, I think the assumption would be one or the other, but based on your experience and knowledge, both of those could happen. I think that let's dig into the third point in his question about joints. What's the scoop there?
Yeah, and I think Scott's right again. And it's always that there is a sweet spot where, oh, it's good. But, you know, if we take things too far, gosh, there's a problem. So, you know, thinking about our joints and participating in, you know, these activities, they're generally repetitive. So they tend to create the possibility of muscle imbalances and can rob us of what we like to call movement variability. You know, that ability to move in all different directions and ways comfortably, easily, proficiently. So take cycling, for example. It's great for the legs, heart, and lungs when it's done correctly, but it's actually horrible for the neck, back, and shoulders due to those chronic postures. And again, you know, cyclists get a little bit uptight about that. You know, they'll, you know, react sometimes with rage and anger, like, well, you know, you can still do your thing, but we've got to do some reversal items and some offsetters to manage those postures. Now with running, you know, a lot of that depends on running form or, you know, or technique, you know, how a person interacts with the ground, their body weight, their overall training volume, and training progression, as in, is it intelligent? And so loading in and of itself is actually good, again, in the right dosage. That stimulates, you know, a bone mineralization, and it helps to strengthen your cartilage and all sorts of things like that. But again, if you are having mechanical things with any cardio activity be suboptimal and you're doing high volumes of it, not so great for your joints. Doesn't have to be, but in that circumstance, yes.
Right. So again, it can, and all three of these nuances, it's not just as simple as yes or no with that question. So I guess let's answer that. I guess the fourth part is that letting go of cardio. I think I know where you're going to go on this, but I kind of want to like take it home and say, John, set the record straight here.
Okay. So as far as letting go of cardio, I'd say this: keep doing some because it's essential and you need it. Any of us do, we all do, but let go of addiction if it's hurting you in any way. So, there are a lot of resources at thelifetimeathlete.com that can help you figure this out. And I also, that's what I do my coaching around. So, if you need that extra help, that's where you go. So here's where we start to boil it down and get specific. The HHS physical activity guidelines for adults, which were, recently updated not too long ago. They can be a little confusing. And so you can read through those, you can look them up anywhere. They suggest 300 minutes or about 5 hours per week of what they call, in quotations, moderate exercise, or 75 to 150 minutes of more vigorous training, plus more daily activity in general. And then they have other guidelines for kids that should be play. And for older adults, we need to incorporate things like mobility and balance.
Sure.
Yes. But here's where things get challenging, because the criteria is somewhat vague. And because that message is really directed at relatively unhealthy, unathletic gen poppers, their definition of moderate is more like what we would call easy, light, and low in TLA terms. And so that's really an important thing to keep in mind. And the vigorous descriptor, it's, again, relatively nonspecific, and it lumps together all sorts of things. So it's just not clear because they're just really, they're trying to get people off the couch and get them moving. And if you want to be more specific, which I do, I say, well, how do we do it at TLA? Well, I like to think we smartify this by saying, okay, first of all, let's understand how you break out activity versus exercise. It's all movement, right? So first of all, we've got GDA, that's general daily activity, a minimum of an hour a day, possibly more, but that's well supported by, tons of research. And we just need to keep our beasts moving to have circulation and avoid metabolic stagnation. Again, things we talk about here a lot. Then, speaking specifically of cardio, you need to do at least 3 30-minute low-intensity steady-state sessions a week. And again, that's a distillation of quite a bit of research. And then a very small sprinkling, adding up to really only just a few minutes of interval repetition type work each week. That's also combined in our model with some exposure to speed, strength, and power training as well. So it's not difficult to do that model. We've talked and written about it extensively. It's 10 hours a week of movement, 7 of activity, about 3 of exercise, a great foundation and base from which any person can be healthy, can be athletically fit. And then also any athlete can use that as the beginning from which they specialize further.
Absolutely.
So, and finally, I would go back to what you said. I think you're brilliant. Beast specificity. So, we always talk about each human is a beast, and we have the animal fit model where you can, it's a body typing system, and you can go through and figure out, based on all sorts of science, what kind of body do you have, and what sports or exercises might be best fits for you, and also what might be some weaknesses you want to be aware of. Well, if you're built like Pheidippides, the original marathoner, the messenger, then you can naturally do more of, say, like running, distance running. And then variants of that body type will also see them. Oh, okay. Well, now let's say you're a cyclist, or so you got a little more muscle mass, you're a rower. You get the picture there. But certain people who are built to go, distance, they can get away with more and enjoy it and excel. Whereas if you're built like a bear, and the bear is the person always gets called when a refrigerator needs to get moved, they all I really want a bear to do is get the minimum amount for, you know, health and function. Even aerobic training for, say, like a lifter helps them to be conditioned enough to get through a workout. You can train more effectively because you've got that little bit of stamina, and keep most of it low impact in the case of the bear. That's what I would sum this up with. I mean, I don't know what animal you are, Scott, and if you want to reach out further, shoot me an email, just contact@thelifetimeathlete.com. We'll break it down.
Absolutely. And I think that goes beyond just Scott, who asked a great question. If you're thinking about cardio and you're wondering what kind of beast you are, answer that question. Do yourself a favor, because it is absolutely enlightening to go through that experience. Certainly it was for me, and I know that it has been for several of my small network who we've, you know, used John's resources, the Animal Fit as the big one, but also talking with John directly. It takes a lot of these things that are sort of needlessly frustrating and just puts them into a context where you're like, I understand my gifts and my limitations. So that's an Animal Fit plug. And if you're curious, definitely you know how to get at John.
Yes. Before we go to point two, I would just say, yeah, Animal Fit is it's an ebook, and it's available on the shop page at thelifetimeathlete.com. It's one of our products. And so thanks for the pitch, PK. And anyone that, again, wants to learn a little bit more about themselves, get more out of them. In fact, unleash your inner beast and unlock your athletic potential.
Do it.
Do
yes.
it.
All right. Okay. So this question, number two, comes from Anonymous and Frustrated. They want to know, it seems no matter how much I hammer the treadmill and the elliptical, I just can't seem to burn off any fat. Help me! !
Wow. I all I can say is thanks so much, Anonymous and Frustrated, for this question, because it clearly addresses one of the biggest misconceptions we have in health and fitness. We've been led to believe that grinding and suffering and sweating in a cardio workout is absolutely essential in weight or fat loss pursuits.
Yeah, I think that not only in sort of like the, from sort of like the basic training, but I think it's also sort of a trope in our pop culture and movies and what, you know, like you got boxers to lean down, they're getting in the road work, etc. So for many reasons, this is sort of generally accepted as how you burn off the fat.
Yeah, and really going back to Scott's question, you know, aerobic training is primarily for aerobic fitness, and we're developing endurance and fatigue resistance. If we're trying to lose body fat, okay, here's the skinny, and I couldn't resist. The fork is more powerful than the dumbbell, which is generally more powerful than the cardio machine.
Okay, you put a hierarchy there. So fork at the top, then the dumbbell, cardio is at the bottom.
Yeah, it depends on your expert, but you know, most people are going to say that nutrition or dietary intake, it's 70 to 80% of body comp. And so really we got to get that first. And that's what we want to be focusing on, as opposed to, let's say, looking at our training to really direct that. I mean, training is important and it helps, but it's really in the case of weight loss, it's for revving the metabolism up a bit, but not necessarily just burning sheer calories. And why I said the dumbbell is more powerful than the cardio machine is that, generally speaking, resistance training, you know, however you're going to do it, dumbbell or not, will, you know, it's stimulating anabolic processes, you know, building bone density, muscle mass. And first of all, those things are more metabolically active anyway. And also, there is a better long-term gain when your goal is fat loss with resistance training than there is with cardio. You might burn a few more calories during the cardio episode, but the long-term burn and benefits is greater actually from
interesting
resistance. Okay. But beyond the amounts for health, you know, that we had mentioned in Scott's question, more cardio is usually not better in a weight loss program for a specific reason. And this is largely related to that hormonal signaling topic that we actually did allude to earlier.
Okay. Okay. We'll break that down for me.
All right. So lots of jogging and other modes of aerobic training start to get into diminishing returns. I think I said diminishing, but I meant to say diminishing returns. It basically sends a message to the body to get rid of muscle because it's heavy and metabolically expensive, but to actually hold on to a little fat because this fool keeps making us cover incessant amounts of distance and time. Mm-hmm. And we need that, you know, cushion of extra energy store. And so basically that message we're sending the body with, you know, high amounts or, you know, what some people call chronic cardio, is causing that. So, what a bummer, you know, you're motivated and you're doing something with a goal, but it's actually shaving muscle and sparing fat, which is pretty much the opposite of what we want to do.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that, and this taps into the frustrated part of the question, because it does, you know, Anonymous and Frustrated got to this point after a lot of work and dedication, but the message that work and dedication was sending to the body was, let's save a little bit of this. Let's set this aside. I might need some fuel for later.
Yeah. And I've spent quite a bit of time in commercial gyms, and you see this a lot, especially if you go to one, or I even had my office in one for several years. There are those people that they come in almost every day or on some type of a regular schedule, and they jump on the cardio machine, and they're suffering and there's a pool of sweat. And over years, they never change. Their body composition never gets to that goal. And it could be done differently.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about that.
Well, we also get very strong hormonal stimulus from what I call compensatory carbohydrate consumption. Or even I've termed it carb eat back syndrome.
Okay.
So basically, when you exercise long enough and chronically, and usually a little too hard because of motivation in most cases, you end up depleting much of your body's energy store. So that's your liver and muscle glycogen. And glycogen is just the stored form of glucose that we pack into our cells. So these are our emergency jet fuel receptacles. And the ancestral beast is programmed to always protect and preserve these reserves for true emergencies. So you end up finishing like a burn cardio workout, ravenously hungry and with an irresistible desire to replenish those carb stores. But the brilliant body, the beast, has a built-in protective mechanism to drive you to eat back 2 to 3 times what you burned, just to make sure everything's topped off. And with carbs, here's the problem. Once you fill the tank back up, if you're not moving and burning it, you're just storing it as fat.
Yeah, I mean, right there, those are two sort of very important points about why this doesn't work. What else is happening when you're doing that?
Yeah, well, I'd say finally, and related to both of those previously mentioned things, chronically depleting your BOD, you're breaking it down. It's a stressor, and that puts it into sympathetic drive. So, you know, our sympathetic nervous system, that's fight or flight. And this is sugar burning or fat saving mode, again, because it's that whole crisis environment internally. So fat burns in a flame of calmness, actually, and that's parasympathetic. And so it's fine to occasionally have this pulsatile sympathetic experience and intensity. That's natural, but it should exist around lots of mellow states. And again, in this modern world, if we're actually propagating the sympathetic drive with our habits, we're defeating our goals for optimal body composition.
Yeah. And I think that all three of those working together, again, are a result of dedication just to something that runs counter to your goal. And I think that, let's look at this. I know that you want to wrap this up by talking about how elite athletes are different than us in the gen pop, and how that makes an impact on, and specifically, cardio and body comp.
Yeah. So exactly like you said, and I'll try to make it quick here, you know, elite athletes are different. You know, most of them they're already healthy and lean, and they're not metabolically unwell in most cases. And so they're not trying to fix a problem. They're actually focused on increasing fitness and performance. So their patterns, that they're not, that's not an example of a weight loss program. It's an example of a peak performance program. And so these athletes, you know, have spent years developing the ability to absorb and tolerate and not have adverse effects from the amount of training that they do. But that doesn't mean that average John or someone else should think that, if I just try to train like that athlete, I might end up looking like that athlete. That's actually goes against the science we just explained.
Absolutely. And so let's get right back to anonymous and frustrated. You know, what are you suggesting here?
I'm gonna say something similar to like I said for Scott. And I'm gonna say, hey, anonymous ANF, keep doing some cardio. Just back off the frequency of it. So if you've been doing 5 or 6 times a week, maybe cut it down to 3 or 4. Back off the duration. If you've been hitting it for 50 or 60 minutes, come down to 30 or 40. And back off your intensity. So, you know, if you've been working, you know, at that grind level and you can't carry on much of a conversation, you're only giving like 1 or 2 word you know, responses or statements, or you'd be capable of that. That's a little too hard for cardio. Mm-hmm. So do that. And then focus primarily on that nutrition side of the equation, which is 70 to 80% of it, again, for body comp, and eat some healthy food like the plant-based diet that we're always talking about. That's planet Earth, with some intermittent time and caloric restrictions. Intermittent, you know, you don't want to stay hypocaloric all the time because your metabolism will slow down. So you got to understand how to occasionally do a refeed. And again, I coach people on that all the time, and many other people do, so you can get some expert professional assistance. And always eat adequate protein. You know, that's one of the keys, you know, 1 gram per pound of body weight at a minimum. And think of it this way. Weight loss and health, or, you know, body composition adjustment, is more of a cruise program than a crash approach. The words say it all.
Absolutely. Woo! And again, if you want to have a specific personal conversation about that, I've benefited from talking directly to someone like Coach Jay-Z. And I think that it just, you know, if you're at this question, even though it seems it's relatively short, it definitely is specific. And I think that, there's some broad strokes, or you can paint with a broad brush, but it also, you can be specific if you have a chance to talk to Coach directly. And, all right, let's tap into the third question. This is more of it's sort of a questions at the end, but, this person sets up sort of the context of their question. So I'll just dive right into it. Does that work for you, John?
Yes.
All right. So this comes from Doug Dog. He writes, John, I'm caught in a loop here. I'm an avid cyclist and trail runner. These sports are not just part of my identity. They're my stress relief, my social, my fun. Roughly, here's my training program. I do Peloton workouts on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 5:30 a.m. before work. It's mostly interval and circuit stuff and lasts about an hour. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I run with a group at lunchtime, and we usually do about 45 to 50 minutes of steady-paced running and often race it out over the last mile and a half. Saturdays are reserved for long runs in the mountains of 2 or 3 hours with a few breaks. Sundays are bike rides, either road or mountain, also about 2 or 3 hours. So here's my issue. I love my workouts, but I'm not seeing progress in my fitness. Most of my training partners are not as consistent at hitting the sessions as I am, but when they do show up, they easily kick my butt. I always seem to be the slow guy, and frankly, I'm just not loving this. I don't see why it's happening. I'm usually a little stiff and tired when we get rolling, but once I loosen up, it seems like I have one gear, and that feels not too far from redline just to keep up, barely. Do you have any suggestions?
Oh, man. Thanks, Doug Dog. I don't want to read into this, but I think you provided enough information for us to identify a few things. So I'll kind of try to
break it down.
Yeah, sure. Keep all this in my mind. Your example suggests that you're training about 10 hours per week, if I do some quick math, and most of it is in the, you know, moderately challenging category. You know, it's not all out, but it's not easy. There doesn't appear to be any easy training or off days to let your body recover and adapt. I'm also guessing that because you are dragging a bit and trying to hang on with your friends, that you don't get to recover ever in a workout because you're tempted to keep up. You know, so this whole tired, stiff, sluggish deal is probably related to that, relatively high intensity, relatively high volume of training that you're doing.
Okay.
Also, because this leaves you not fully rested, you're probably not getting true high intensity, or what I like to call fitness maker training, in your program. You know, I think you said you were caught in a loop, and I would say, yeah, you're kind of caught in the middle. And that's this loop that you're describing, where generally speaking, mid-level training, so I'm going to say that's of moderate intensity and, you know, moderate workload, as we have discussed here on the show, it's actually the least valuable of the three types, low, medium, and high. You know, you get, you know, a lot of benefit from low, and you really get the adaptations from high. You just can't do high all the time. So now, because you're stuck in medium, I think that that's potentially a problem. I use this three-level model, level one, level two, level three, and it's a stoplight analogy. So one is green, two is yellow, and three is red, to describe intensity and also to describe workload, which is simply intensity applied over the duration of a workout. I generally see great results when I can steer folks to use that. And it's especially true in endurance sports, because a lot of this has, what I've been doing over time has paralleled, or actually has been more recently supported by, the polarized training model, again, for endurance athletes more specifically than others, that Dr. Steven Seiler's research, as well as my own experience, supports. And so most athletes, elite athletes, and he studied many of them across sport, across the world, you know, world champions, Olympians, et cetera, they only train hard red zone work about 20% of the time. And again, when they train hard, they train hard. They typically red zone it. Almost all the rest of the time, they just do easy work for approximately 80% of their training, where they're in the green zone. So, you know, whatever is easy for an individual, you know, that's green. And so some people get confused because they see elite athletes, you know, doing X miles at X speed, and they're like, well, that doesn't look easy. Well, it is for them because they're elite athletes. But
sure.
Yellow training is, I mean, honestly, it's almost like eating yellow snow.
Right, right. And again, I think that's just insightful. Okay, so we talked about the physiology, but we're also getting window into Doug Dogg's thinking here, psychology. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that it's important to observe both of those things.
Sure.
You know, explain some of that physiology to the best of my ability today. If you know, I think my coffee intake is just about right. But I also want to be, you know, I want to be respectful of psychology and to Doug Dogg, you know. And so, hey, look, you love what you're doing. I can see that. And you've built your life around it. We don't need to assail your character. That's not appropriate for anyone to do. We just need to get you to embrace a slightly more sensible and scientifically proven model. So here's my suggestion. I'm going to try to be specific. Cut back to attending only two of those group training sessions per week. So it sounds like, I don't know, you got like, you know, what do you got?
Four.
Two. Yeah, so she's got four. So let's cut it back to two. Okay. And pick the ones you want. You know, that I don't need that kind of control. And if you do things right, you'll show up fresh on those days when you're with your buddies, and you'll perform better, and you'll even enjoy it more in all probability. Next, move your biking and resistance training, those are the Peloton workouts, to a different time of day and sleep in an extra hour instead. I don't know if sleeping till 6:30 is sleeping in, or actually, I guess if you're starting the workout at 5:30, you know, what you can do the math there. But anyway, skip the morning workout, move it to a different time, use that time for sleep, which helps your body to recover and you know, again, get out of this hole that you've dug yourself into. Then just do low, slow cardio mojo. So that's steady state fashion, nice and easy, either before or after you perform some traditional basic strength training. So it's just, I don't want you doing all these like fancy HIIT circuits and all the, I think there's too much glitz and glam and hype in that. What you need to do is you just need to do some reps, you know, work on basic strength and mobility. Do that, trust me. Get an inexpensive heart rate monitor. They're everywhere and they're cheap. Obviously, the more expensive ones have more features and maybe slightly more accurate, but actually, you know, if you spend $30 on a heart rate monitor watch, it's actually been, most of them have been shown to have EKG level specificity. So again, get an inexpensive heart rate monitor, and now keep every run and ride, except those two group sessions where you're kind of free to do what you want, keep everything else at or below 70% of your maximum heart rate. Now, interesting enough, you'll say, oh, go ahead, PK.
Yeah, John, I was just going to say, so I'm Doug Dog, who I've been training hard at. I'm going to say, like, that's going to feel like you're not doing much. I mean, so tap into that. If you're coming back saying, like, 70%, it feels like I'm barely doing anything.
Yeah, yeah, and that's actually, it's not true. You're doing a lot of good things for yourself. That's where, you know, that's how the elites do it. And that, you know, why shouldn't you train like the elites, at least in your own level and capacity? So, and the other thing that comes up with this is a lot of people say, well, I don't know my max heart rate. And they say, should I use that 220 minus age? I'm like, yeah, probably not. That's not been shown to be very specific, valid, I should say. But, wear your heart rate when you're out there on one of those hammer sessions with your bros or gals, you know, whatever. And you might not hit true max, but if you're running one of those things and you're racing it out over the last mile and a half, you're going to be within a couple beats of max, you know, towards the end of that. And so you can just use that number and then do the calcs on it. So let's say, you know, you're racing it out in that run and you look at your watch and it says 180. Okay, so let's just say, all right, well, if max heart rate, we're going to guess it at 180, that's closer than using an equation. Then we're going to say, okay, well, 10% of that's 18. 20% is 36 beats. Then we go to 54 beats. And so you take 180 minus 54. So that gives you 126. That's your ceiling for all those easy workouts. So you can hit 126. You do not have to peg it there, but we want you under that number.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, tracking.
So now throw out one workout entirely so that you have a true off day and only work out 6 days per week. There's no need to train seven. You know, I would say that 5 to 6 for the serious athlete is better than 3 to 4, but 7 is not better than 5 to 6.
Got it. Okay.
Do all of this for 4 to 6 weeks. Then report back on how you're feeling and performing. And I'm willing to bet you'll be faster, fresher, and maybe even happier. Then we can talk about your next goal and how the training program can be modified further.
Absolutely. I hope that Doug Dog puts this into effect because of the dedication to the existing program. I just love to see, you know, after 4 to 6 weeks, applying this methodology, what would happen? Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I'm gonna back you up, and I'm gonna say, okay, to Doug Dog, yeah, man, you got to give it 4 to 6 weeks and convert that motivation to do this, and then you'll see what the results are. So, you know, if you don't see a change in 10 days, you might, but don't worry, you will in 4 to 6 weeks. I guarantee it. And one last thing, you'll still be training plenty. So, you know, that training bug, you know, you can service that, but maybe you should find a way to meet up with a friend, maybe for coffee or even a discussion stroll, like PK, my broach, and I do sometimes, so that you don't feel like you're giving up anything, not losing out on your camaraderie. I mean, I realized that was important for you. And so we have to create this win. And I believe that list that I went through is a good way to do so.
Absolutely. Well, and furthermore, like a walk or a stroll, that's active recovery. So that's something that could happen on that day that you're not doing your training, right? On that quote unquote rest day, you're just getting the active recovery.
Yeah, you bet. It's pure gold.
Gold. All right, John, loved the answers. As always, I took notes and I learned a lot. Before we get out of here for the day, tell me what the training tribe's been up to lately.
Oh, yes. Oh, gosh. I love talking about T2. In fact, it makes me think I should probably explain how I work with lifetime athletes.
Let's do it.
So kind of the first thing up is T2 or the training tribe. And training tribe is based around this concept of athletic fitness. And so we use like a conjugate model that addresses, you know, concurrently all the capacities of human performance, that's strength, speed, power, agility, and endurance. And then we also apply a block periodization system to it. So the year is broken up into 5 blocks of 2 to 3 months each. And one of those capacities is emphasized more heavily than the others in each block. And so it's a cool way to create this balanced, complete athlete. And it's a plug and play where, you know, if you're in the tribe, you don't have to think about what to do, but being in the tribe pretty much guarantees you that, you know, you can wake up any day and say, I think I'll kick ass at whatever comes my way. That's a nice feeling.
And, sure, and so
that's kind of like me, you know, or that's kind of how I fit in. You know, I'm kind of like a person that, you know, I'm doing athletic fitness through most of the year. Then I look at you and I say, well, okay, now you've got a guy like PK who he's kind of also a triber in that, yeah, he uses the tribe system and methods, but then he's got some specific pushes through the year. He'll usually have a ski season. There's often a surf trip. There's a mountain bike campaign. And so what he'll do is he'll take that basic programming and then, you know, kind of add on to it some of his specialization. Works fine. Next level up, though, is we get to the person who says, well, I'm a real specialist and I do the one thing, you know, mostly. And so then they're not necessarily in the tribe. That's a one-on-one coaching, either consult or, you know, ongoing relationship. And so what we do there is we say, okay, look, let's really identify those gifts and strengths in your body, fine tune your program so that, you know, you've got a flexible but very specific program for your body and your goals. And then we can filter in little bits of all those other capacities just to keep you shored up and kicking at the max and peak performance type
Absolutely.
Thing. Then the very last, segment of the lifetime athlete population that I end up working with are people who, you know, they are in a sport, but they're probably in a program. They're on a team. They have a coach. They have some other things. And I'll oftentimes really enjoy working with that individual as well as that people like this, their coaches, to support off-season training, because a lot of times, you know, that the athletes are left to their own own devices to do off-season training. And so it's like, oh, I'll help manage off-season training. And then the other thing that I'll do a lot is this whole like injury management, injury solutions, movement analysis kind of stuff where, you know, I'll get people that know about, you know, my decades of doing that. And they want some kind of like physical therapy based programming or consulting. And so that's kind of what happens. So I've got the tribe member that's just in the tribe like me, a tribe member who does occasional specialization, a specialist who really benefits from all-in coaching, and then someone who's already programmed in other ways that needs a little bit of assist. And so that's kind of, I don't know why I went into all that, but I just felt like I should explain it. And so
sure.
You did ask me some number of words ago, what's the training tribe been up to lately? And this is really cool because we're deloading this week by going very light on intensity, but we're actually holding on to a bit of volume. So that, I mean, obviously workload is intensity times duration in training. And so I really brought their intensity down a lot, but they've got a lot of exercise variety and time that they're putting in this week. There has been a lot of basic movement pattern competency work with weights and bands and drills. now, we're starting next month, we're heading towards more what I would call multi-positional fatigue resistance work, and even some medicine ball agility play.
Oh my, look at that. I tell you what, it's fantastic.
Yeah, and I would just say this, if you like the way that sounds, guys, check out T2 at thelifetimeathlete.com. And actually, for less than a buck a day, you can dive into the world of athletic fitness by joining our online training community. And lastly, if you really dug the discussions, even for Doug Dogg, and you think you might need or want some in-depth coaching, just hit the old coaching menu item, and I am honored to engage with you.
And me as well. Absolutely. So I think that get in where you fit in, and just tap into that. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you, PK. And thank you, audience, for listening. You're the greatest. Rock on.